Well, a couple of years ago, I was going through the Ten Commandments series, and I was covering commandment after commandment as we were going through that series, and I made it through about five. Then I picked it back up and did a second one on the fourth commandment. I never did finish that Ten Commandment series. And in fact, I was going back through and looking at my notes, and I and realized I had not finished that. Not only did I not finish it, but it's been over a few years that we worked through those. So I still have a few more that I want to work through over the months ahead, and hopefully not over the next 2 or 3 years. But I plan to try to wrap those up. I usually finish those within a 6 month or a year period. Now I can go back and start on some of those again. Well, again, we can ask ourselves, well, how can you spend so much time on one particular commandment out of the ten? And it is actually quite easy. There's a lot of information in the Ten Commandments. When we look at the spirit of the law, when we look at what God was intending for Israel to follow and obey, there is a lot of information and about each one of these. Today I want to focus on the ninth commandment. Let's go to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 6. Actually, 20 verse 16, I'm sorry. 20 verse 16. Yeah, the ninth commandment doesn't begin that early. Exodus 20 verse 16. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Now, others have shortened it. When you look at the Ten Commandments, they say you should not lie. But it says, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. This is a topic that deals with integrity. In fact, all the Ten Commandments deal with integrity. But it is a passage that deals with integrity. It deals with lying. It deals with portraying something that is not solid or truthful. And when we think about what integrity means, integrity is portraying something that is solid, dependable, sure, something that has soundness and stability. And again, when you don't portray that or don't fulfill that in what we say and what we portray, then it is bearing false witness. But this commandment covers lying in general, as we'll find out as we see this particular commandment, but it also covers other aspects of lying and other aspects of how it affects other people. Again, you may tell a lie. You may have said something after Thanksgiving. No, I didn't eat that last piece of pie that's in the fridge. That's not about another person, or may affect another person if they were wanting that last piece of pie. But if you just make a statement and it's a lie that you didn't eat it when you did, that's a lie. Or, I didn't cheat on a test. Or maybe you did cheat on a test and you say, well, that's okay. That's a lie. And, of course, that's something that you face individually. Now, again, it's a sin against those who may be giving the test, but you're portraying something that is false. False witness against your neighbor is something that goes and covers a little bit more. It goes in depth. Now, lying, and then it does cover the subject of lying, but it covers even more. What do we mean by the phrase false witness? To bear false witness. According to the Hebrew definition from Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, the word false is a word that means untruth or a sham. Something without a cause, something that's deceit or deceitful. Liar, lie, or lying, or something that is done wrongfully or said wrongfully. So we're not to lie. And it says here, so false, not to bear false witness, not to bear a lie, not to bear something or state something that is deceitful or something that is lying. But it's also more as we look at the word witness, not to bear false witness. The word witness comes from a word that means to witness, to testimony, or specifically a recorder, somebody who's recording information and just repeating it but not stating it as it is, or witnessing to something. It includes false information or false lies in any way, and we know that we're not to lie. But we're also told not to give false testimony. The word record, to record something, is to record as something that took place. Not necessarily that you're assigned to be a court reporter, or recorder rather, or you're not assigned to record something, or that's your task, but to take in information and you have a record of what took place. To record something or give a record of something that is false or deceptive, or that could be misleading. So to report something, and, you know, I was there, this is what I saw, and this is my record of what took place. But to give a record of something that is false or deceptive. Now, it's not just that it may be false. You may say, well, I told everything true. I left things out, but I told the truth. That's still a deceptive record or recording of something that took place. We see that in the news today, that news will take stories and they leave a lot of information out to try to lead a person to a certain belief or a certain idea, a certain perception of things that are taking place, and that is a false record. If it's not all of the information, or if it's not information that is pertinent to make you understand something, and they're only giving you a slant of the news, then that is something that is a false record. And again, there's a deeper spirit of the law. When he says not to bear false witness or not to lie, it goes beyond just not stating something false, as we're going to see. From the online dictionary, the free dictionary, it elaborates this meaning of bearing false witness. And it goes through a list of some of the words and some of the descriptions that describe what it means to bear false witness. And I want to read through these because as we look at it, you realize there's a lot of different ways of approaching this phrase of not to bear false witness. It says it comes from a verb, abrogate, or to affirm to the contrary. You affirm something that is a certain way when it's contrary to what was actually there. Or to apostatize. Now, we think of apostasy, we have an understanding or an idea of what that is, but what does it mean to apostatize? It means to renounce or abandon or refuse a religious, political belief or principle. So to renounce a principle, to abandon a principle, or to abandon a religious belief. To apostatize. No. Can't even talk today. Apostatize. And I will touch on that in a moment. The dictionary definition goes on. It means to be deceitful. To be devoid of truth. To be dishonest. Erroneous. To be faithless. To be fallacious. Now, fallacious means it's based on a mistaken belief. So you could believe something that's based on a mistaken belief, and if you hold that and you convey that to others, this is what this means when it's based on a mistaken belief, then you are witnessing to a fallacious belief or mistaken belief. So to base our understanding on a mistaken belief or speculative or non-biblical doctrine, if we say, well, you know, I believe what's being taught, I believe what this individual's teaching, but it's speculative or it's not in the Bible, and you say, well, this is what we're told to do. This is, stating dogmatically, the teachings that God wants us to have. If it's based on mistaken beliefs, then again, we're bearing false witness if we convey that and say this is, or it is true, what is being said of that this particular teaching, if it is false. Definition goes on, it means to be false, to be forewarned, to be fraudulent. So when we think about lying, most people say, well, I don't tell a lie. I'll just keep it to myself. I'm not going to say anything, so I never lie. But cheating on a test is fraudulent. Cheating on taxes is fraudulent. It still has to do with bearing false witness. You're making a statement on paper. You're making a statement if you turn in a report, or somebody writes a report for you and you put it in under your name. It's fraudulent. And again, it still falls under this particular commandment of not bearing false witness. It means to be insincere. Now, there's a word when we think of you shall not bear false witness. How many of us think of that as you shall not be insincere? Again, when we look at these descriptions, and we can think about that for a moment, to give an impression that we think or believe a certain way, yet we're being insincere. If you say, well, I really feel this way about something, and you don't, then you're conveying a false representation. You're being insincere, but it means you're not expressing your genuine feelings, and it is an insincerity, but it is also being a false witness. I had a deacon, I'll tell you a story, years ago wanted to speak on a particular topic, and he strongly disagreed with what the church taught about it. I said, well, I thought you disagreed with what the church teaches as a doctrine on this. And he wanted to give a message on it. And he said, I do, but I plan to teach it like the church teaches it. And I said, okay, no, you won't. And he said, well, I plan, you know, why can't I give it? And he goes, it's not what I agree with, but I'm going to teach it like the church teaches it. You cannot be insincere. You can't believe one thing and teach another, because then that is, even though he may be teaching truth, he's doing it in a deceptive way because he doesn't believe it. It's not expressing genuine feelings or beliefs, and that is something that is insincere. Now, if it's nothing less than bearing false witness, we think of bearing false witness or bearing false testimony. And again, that's what that would be. Lying to yourself or deceiving others, saying this is what God says, when you don't feel that it is. It is not bearing a lie, but it is bearing insincerity and showing a false side. We cannot lie and teach something else. We can't live a lie or believe a lie and teach something else. Now, we call that hypocrisy, you know, thinking one thing and teaching another, or living one way of life and portraying another. But that is also bearing false witness or being insincere. Dictionary goes on. It means to be mendacious, being not telling the truth or lying. Perfidious, which means deceitful or untrustworthy. To be deceitful or untrustworthy. So to bear false witness is not just a lie, but is be deceitful. Now, we see many people in the world being deceitful. In the business world, you see deceit, you see people that are untrustworthy, and you think, well, wow, if I was running this company, half the people working here, if you knew what they did, you'd probably say, well, half the people I can't even trust to be my own employees. Deceitfulness or untrustworthiness is a description of bearing false witness. I want to look at this one for a moment. When you deceive someone into doing something or into believing something or believing someone, saying something and trying to teach them to or expect them to believe something differently, then the truth, you have broken the ninth commandment. Now you say, well, I didn't tell a lie. I just kind of led them in a direction, or I deceived someone into thinking that, but I never told them that, so I'm not guilty. You've still broken that ninth commandment. When you have broken trust, being untrustworthy, you've broken trust, meaning you cannot be trusted or believed. If you have a reputation of being untrustworthy, it's because there's not a trust of integrity. There's not a trust of sincerity or truth. And if you continue to have that reputation because of the way that you say things, it may be because of these other descriptions that we see here. All right, the dictionary goes on. It means to be perjured, to be spurious, to be untruthful, to break faith. Now, earlier we saw to apostatize means to move away or step away from beliefs. And again, here we see it as being broken away from faith. It means to contradict, to deny, to deviate from the truth. It is to falsely testify, to falsify, to forswear, and it even gives to go back on one's word. If you tell somebody something and you go back on your word, then you told them a statement, you made something clear, and you go back on your word, that is a false testimony or a false witness. How many of us have ever been guilty of going back on our word? I don't want to show a hands, but to think about that, just that we've made a statement to somebody or we've told them something and then later had to change it. Now, when I say had to change it, it may not be, well, okay, I set an appointment, I said I would be there, but then you call them and I said, you know, I'm stuck in traffic, it's going to be 2 hours before I get there. That's not a false statement. But to commit to something, you know, somebody asks you, I want you to be at this particular event, then you say, I wouldn't miss it for the world, I will be there, and never show up. That would be a false witness. Promising to give somebody something, but never delivering. You know, somebody asks you, do you have such and such? Oh, yeah, I'm going to give that back to you. And you never do. If you state, I'm going to do this, and you promise something and don't deliver, then it is bearing a false testimony, a false witness. Promising somebody something, but then changing your mind, and you can say, well, it's not a lie because I changed my mind about it. Well, it's still a lie if you do not come forth with the information showing that, you know I promised you this, but I made a mistake and I'm not able to come through. But to change your mind. All of these are false witness. Another definition is to impugn, meaning to dispute the truth. If you know something is truth or it is truth, and you go against it or you dispute it, well, that's what people say is truth, but I believe something different. Or that's what the Bible says, but you can't use that because of these other beliefs that we have. To dispute truth is to bear false witness. To lie, to miscite, or to misquote someone. Now, we may be guilty of that where we say, well, so-and-so said this. Well, is that what they said? Well, not exactly what they said. If you misquote someone and you lead another individual to believe something, it falls under this misciting. To misreport, to perjure oneself, to pervert, to revoke, to speak falsely or to swear falsely, or to take back. Now, I mentioned earlier changing our mind. If you take something back. Now, there's terms for that in the past and where you promise or you give something to somebody and then you take it back and you say, well, I changed my mind. If you say something and then take it back and don't correct it, that is a lie. Or to tell a lie or to utter a falsehood. And again, that's why I mentioned it is something that deals with integrity. Being a false witness has a lot of the opposite characteristics of what integrity is. To be solid, to be truthful, to be honest, to be open, to be pure. And to bear false witness goes directly against integrity. The theme of this year's camp, for the summer camps, deals with integrity. And again, it's going to be an exciting opportunity that we have to go through messages and to teach our young people what integrity is and how to walk in that, how to be a person of integrity. And one of the definitions mentioned was perjury. What is perjury? And it is based on this particular commandment. In legal terms, perjury is when a person lies under oath. They, in today's society, and I found this interesting, we were watching a movie not too long ago. Even today when they swear somebody into an office, they still put their hand on the Bible, even though Bible and God and everything else is removed from things, they still put their hand on a Bible and they swear an oath. Or to go into a courtroom and individuals are asked to swear an oath or promise to tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So perjury is to lie under oath. And in our country, it is a punishable crime. Perjury means to falsify information. You give false information or to lie about another person while under oath. Let's look at how this was dealt with in the Old Testament. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 19. Deuteronomy chapter 19 and verse 15. I know that dictionary definition had a lot of things, and you can look those up and to see other further descriptions. But it's interesting to see all the different facets of even what the dictionary would describe as bearing false witness or a lie. All right, Deuteronomy 19 and verse 15. One witness shall not rise against a man concerning an iniquity or sin that he commits, By the mouth of two or three witnesses, the matter is established. He said, you don't just listen to one person coming up and go, you know, so-and-so did this, they should be punished, and accept that as truth. He says, if, in verse 16, if a false witness rises against a man to testify against him of wrongdoing, then both men in the controversy shall stand before the Lord, before the priest and the judges who serve in those days, and the judges shall make a careful inquiry. They don't just take one person's word for it, but they make a careful inquiry. And indeed, if the witness is a false witness who has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother, and so shall you put away the evil from among you. If somebody comes with a false accusation and they accuse you of doing something, and they just play it forward, they want to see you punished, and they've made up this story about you. It says, if it is proved to be a false witness, then do to him as he would have thought to have done to his brother. Verse 20, it says, those who remain shall hear and fear, and hereafter that they shall not again commit such evil among you. God says this is something evil. When you put together a story or a false testimony or false witness against another individual, God says this is an evil, and he was trying to rid the nation of that. We're to learn from it. Now, the processes may not be the same today, but the principle is. We don't follow those same mistakes. It says in verse 21, your eyes shall not pity. Life shall be for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, and foot for foot. There was an equal punishment given to an individual who falsely testified against another individual. For example, if you falsely accuse someone of theft, let's say you falsely say, they stole something of mine, and this person, if they were found guilty, if they were, even though it may not be true, if they were accused of being guilty, and they would have spent a week in jail, then he said, you would have spent that week in jail. Or if you testified against somebody and said, this individual was involved in murder, and you were found to be a liar, then you would suffer the penalty that they would have had to endure for murder. If you falsely accuse them, this person murdered somebody, I saw it, and it was a false accusation, whatever penalty would have been on that individual had they received it would fall on you. But that would cut down on a lot of false accusations if you ended up with the penalty of falsely accusing someone else. Today we have many who are coming out and are accusing others of sexual harassment or sexual harassment on the job. And as one comes out, another comes out, we start seeing more and more and more. And again, so much of it has been reported, and some of it may be true, some of it may be false. Some of it is likely slander and false testimony for money, and they've seen some of that, and that comes out, oh, that never happened. They were just trying to get money. And again, we have to be very careful when listening to accusations against an individual, but also being very careful about how we might accuse someone else. Modern example, if you're bitter towards somebody in a congregation and you go up and you tell a pastor, well, this individual has done something and they need to be corrected about it. They need to be punished. Or they need to be put out of the church because of what they've done. If it was found that you had lied and it was a false accusation, according to the Old Testament, you would be held accountable for that. Now, I don't think most people would come up and tell a flat lie based on the fear of being caught or what it might do to them. But half the truth, or half the information, and again, that is still falling under the deception, or half-truths, or being deceitfully leading someone to think a certain way, and it's still a lie. Still born false witness against our neighbor. Life, Hope, and Truth states in an article, the Ninth Commandment is designed to prevent slander and perversion of justice. It's to prevent slander and the perversion of justice. It's not just a statement, you shall not lie. God tells Moses in Exodus 23, and we're going to turn there soon. But in Exodus 23, he says, you shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a crowd or do evil, and you shall not testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. He said, you shall not pervert judgment of your poor in this dispute. Keep yourself far from a false matter. Now, he doesn't only tell us don't lie. He says, keep yourself far from a false matter. If you know there's a situation going on and it's based on false information, he says, keep yourself away from it because it's going to get to be a mess. If you know that something is stated as false about someone, whether that be work, church, friends, school, if it is a false situation and it is something that is based on false truth or false information that is given to be truth, stay away from it. He says, do not kill the innocent and righteous, for I will not justify the wicked. And you shall take no bribe, for bribe blinds or discerns and perverts the words of righteous. God says the wicked are those who will testify falsely, and he says they will be punished. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 5. And there are several Proverbs that state something very similar to this. Proverbs chapter 19 and in verse 5. He says, a false witness will not go unpunished. He who speaks lies will not escape. And we can think, well, I got away with it, or you know, I told a lie, or I told something that wasn't true. I didn't lie, but I kind of steered the information away from the complete truth, and I got away with it. God says, no, a false witness will not go unpunished. He who speaks lies will not escape. One of my favorite passages, and one that is comforting, is found in Luke, and I have used this in my own life in situations that have come up. There was a time that a member was spreading lies and rumors about me to multiple congregations. And it was when I was being called in the pastoral ministry. And so all these lies were being spread. And this was one of those comforting passages. And I realize it's not in my hands. I can't stop them from doing something. But God makes it clear what is to take place. In Luke 12 and verse 2, the New King James Version says, there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that it will not be made known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light. Whatever you have spoken in the ear of inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops. And I thought, you know, for me to go out and state to everyone, oh, that's not true. Or maybe you've heard these rumors. That's not true. Here, let me tell you my side of it. Would be just trying to defend truth, but it also gives the implication, well, why is he trying to set it straight? If it's false, it will become known. If it is true, it will become known. And so I sat back and just waited, asked God to reveal it, and over a period of 4 to 6 months of this going on, it became revealed and people realized, oh, these are false information. Individuals who had known me for years and years and years in that congregation, because it was one I grew up in as a teenager, they said, I know some of these things that I'm hearing from this individual. He may not know that we've known you that long, but we know, you know, from these statements that it is absolutely not true. And eventually the rest of it came out and he was discovered as being a false witness or giving false testimony about an individual. But again, to know that God says whatever is done in the dark or will be heard in the light, whatever is spoken in inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops. It'll come out in time. Truth is something that endures. Truth is something that will come out. And it also is known that if you have said something falsely or you tell a lie, it will come back and it will be revealed. There's a danger in telling lies, but especially telling lies about other people. To pervert the truth or to give an impression that something happened or occurred in a certain way when it's not the complete truth is a false witness. To say, well, this happened in this way, and you're kind of leading a person to think a certain way when it is not, is what this verse or the command is about. Proverbs 14:25 says, a true witness delivers souls, but a deceitful witness speaks lies. Let's go to Exodus chapter 23. This is what I was reading from earlier, Exodus 23 and verse 1. Says, you shall not circulate a false report. You're giving a report on something that took place. You shall not circulate that. You shouldn't pass it around. Now, if it's a report and you don't know or you weren't there, you just heard it and you pass it along, definitely you shouldn't do that. But even if you were there, you're not to circulate a false report. Do not put your hand or put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. He said, don't get caught up in it. Don't be a part of somebody else's false witness. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. Now this not only has that you're standing up and testifying, but that you're joining others in saying this testimony or this statement is true. But it is to turn aside many to think a certain way. Strong's Exhaustive Concordance says these words, so as to turn aside, are from the Hebrew natah, N-A-W-T-A-W, or N-A-T-A-H. And it comes from a root word that means to stretch, to spread out, or to bend away. Now, we've heard the term to stretch the truth. Stretching of the truth is a lie. Now, it may have truth involved in it, but if it is stretching the truth, it's making it something that is not. It is a lie, or making it appear something that is different from the truth. Now, even if it is mostly true, you say, well, this was mostly true. I told mostly the truth. If your version of something is done in deceit, if it is done to work up a belief in something, then it is a lie. Now, sometimes false witnesses are worked up. It takes time and they have to develop, how am I going to keep this moving forward? And it is something that has worked. But it is done in deceit. It's done to lead somebody to believe something. That's quite different than flat out lying to someone if you're doing something to lead them in a direction that is untruthful. This is the spirit of the law. So it's creating something so another individual will be caught up or caught in something, and so that you could portray it in a different way. We call it a setup. You know, I was set up. I was framed. We also sometimes call it spin. And you've heard this phrase of spin. It has been used in the past. It is a political term many times when we think of politicians spinning the truth, spinning it to give them what they want individuals to believe. I want to read from an article by Eddie Foster, Enemies of Honesty, Spin. And this is from May 23rd, 2016. He says, spin is the final and maybe the most subtle enemy of honesty. Spin is an enemy of honesty. He says, when truth is slyly employed for dishonesty, how do we recognize how to avoid such a sneaky approach? He said, it's just a spin. It's got truth involved in it, but how do you identify that? How do you figure out if something is spun? He says, the word spin originated from the old idiom to spin a yarn. Now, I've talked about this before. We use old phrases. Some of you, if I was to say, well, you know, that so-and-so is just spinning a yarn, you may think, okay, he's telling a lie or he's twisting the truth. Our young people may go, why is he spinning yarn? How do you spin yarn? But it comes from that old idiom, to spin a yarn, which means to tell a tale or an exaggerated story. Now, all of us may have been guilty of that at some time, of elaborating on a story and exaggerating it to the point where your friends go, wait a minute, I was with you, that didn't happen. Yeah, you didn't slam dunk with two hands and your head was above the rim. No, that's exaggerating a story. But it's to tell a tale or an exaggerated story. In the 1980s, it was infused with more political meaning, involving people who did this kind of storytelling about their employers. And it was telling information from a certain perspective rather than objectively. You're telling a story from one side and it's done from a certain perspective instead of done objectively, looking at it as it was. Therefore, the article goes on, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary now has a definition for spin doctor. Now, we've heard that term, spin doctor. He's a spin doctor. That's not a DJ. That's not somebody who's working the tables. A spin doctor is a person, such as a political aide, responsible for ensuring that others interpret an event from a particular point of view. Spin doctors, and they know that that's what they are, is spin doctors. Their job is to interpret an event from a particular point of view that makes it seem like it is something other than it is. So to spin can be telling the truth from a certain point of view. And if you know that it is a false point of view, it's a lie. If you try to make a story sound a certain way, you may be using truthful words, but if you try to make it sound like something is happening without saying it that way, you're just telling the truth. But if you're deceitfully leading somebody into believing something, then that is other than the truth completely, then it is a false witness. This article goes on, unfortunately, that certain point of view is in fact an enemy of honesty. A certain point of view can be an enemy of honesty. There's nothing wrong with staying positive and looking on the bright side. Now, you may say, well, I tried to make it sound better than it was because I want to stay positive. This is, but not at the expense of reality. You can make things sound positive without stretching or spinning the truth. It says, honesty is objective and balanced, while spin is more about deceptively making something look more favorable or less favorable than it actually is. You're trying to lead a person to think a certain way. And not only does God not want us to do that, but he despises that type of attitude. It's a subtle lie, but it is deception, which goes even deeper. The subtle spin was a tactic of Satan. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 3. This subtlety that Satan used in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 1 says, now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field. It says, it didn't come in and say he was just bold and he just jumped in and started telling them what they needed to do. No, it says he was subtle, which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, yes, has God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? Now, he was asking her something just as God had told him. But he did it in a way to spin. He says, has God said? Well, yeah, that's what God said. Why are you asking? Has God said this to you? So spin one, he asked the question about the truth, but he does it in a way that was to create doubt. He was putting spin on what God had said. And again, that's often used today. It's used today in individuals who have prophecies that go way off of what Scripture actually says, and they put a spin on it, and they state what is there to lead people to believe something that is not. Someone who may have said something true, but it's leading you to a mistrust, or leading into mistrusting what is actually written in God's Word. So he says, has God said to you, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? The woman said to the serpent, we may eat of every fruit of the tree that's in the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. The serpent said to the woman, you shall not surely die. So spin turns into a direct lie. First, he led her to begin to doubt. Then he tells her a direct lie. You shall not surely die. For God knows that in the day you eat thereof, your eyes are going to be opened, and you shall be gods. A second direct lie, knowing good and evil. When the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took the bait. She fell for the direction that Satan was leading her in, and she ate of the fruit and also gave to her husband with her, and he did eat. Back to this article on spin. He says, spin is so subtle because it dances with our own perceptions and biases. Therefore, it is difficult to identify when we are being sold a bill of goods. Eve was taught directly by God, and now she's being told something different. And it was difficult to identify, is this true, is this not true? And so he mixed truth and error. He says, here are a couple ways to recognize spin. He says, truth isn't really truth when spin is involved. Even truth can be distorted. So we must avoid such little fictions as embellishing, exaggerating, omitting important information, or pretending ignorance. Pretending you don't know when you do is lying. If you pretend, well, I don't know what went on, or you even state, I don't know what went on, or omitting important information. If it's important to the truth and you omit telling it, then it is a lie. Think about that for a moment. If you omit information, that's putting a spin on the truth. James 4:17 says, therefore, to him who knows to do good and does it not, to him it's a sin. So if you know you should tell the truth and you omit that information because, well, I don't want to say that because that really brings it out in the open, then it is spin. And God says, if you know to do good, you need to do it. If you know to tell the truth and you don't, it's a sin. So, okay, so two ways to recognize spin. One, evaluate different sources of information. Don't just get information from one place. Now, God gave that as an example to Israel. And he says, don't just accept the witness of one person as the truth. Getting all the information from news, or all your information for news from one source is dangerous. Spin makes what we hear seem objective and balanced. If it's led in one direction and you only hear one story, well, that seems like it's pretty much right on. Until we hear a completely opposite perspective from somewhere else. He says preaching to the choir is Spin's specialty. So be sure that you have access to different points of view and a multitude of counselors. Get different points of view, especially in receiving news. And we're told to watch what's going on in the world. You could watch one channel and say, well, so-and-so, this channel has the best news, and they tell it like it is. I don't think there's any one channel that tells it like it is. And you can watch channels, and people have recommended, oh, watch this particular news channel, because they tell it exactly like it is. And you watch it, and you realize, wait a minute, checking the other sources, that information isn't quite true, or there's a spin to it. We have to check different points of view and have that multitude of counselors. Proverbs 11:14 says, where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. In a multitude of information, in a multitude of asking other opinions and other direction, there's safety. So he says, get all the information. Evaluate different sources of information. God tells us one witness to an incident is not enough to know the truth. We got to get it from more than one place. And he says, in the mouth of two or three, a matter shall be established. It's like the old circling or circle whispering game. And at the Feast of Tabernacles this year, we actually played a game. I hadn't played this before, but it's almost like Pictionary. The first person was given a sentence or a statement, they had to draw a picture of it and pass it along, and the second person then had to interpret, what does this picture mean? And they had to draw a picture and pass it along. And so you have all these different pictures, and by the time you get to the end, the picture and the meaning is totally different than what the statement was. Now, the circle game is you whisper in somebody's ear. You can have a room of 10 or 12 people, and there's a sentence you give somebody, and you say, I want you to say this certain line. Here it is on the paper. And they whisper it into the person's ear. And they whisper it in somebody else's ear. And by the time it comes back around, it's way different than it was. So he says, in the circle whispering game, what starts out with one person will not get back the way it was said. And again, we have to be very careful not to get involved in a matter or judge a matter until we hear more than one point of view. Each person heard one statement in the circle, but all of them, except for the first one, were incorrect. And again, we can't just take one statement or one word until we have all the facts. Proverbs 18, verse 13 says, "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it's a folly and a shame to him." You answer a matter before you hear it. So somebody comes to you and they say, "Oh, so-and-so did this to me. Oh, that's terrible." And you go over there and you say, "You should have never done that to them." Well, you just answered a matter before you heard it. You heard it from one person, but you haven't heard all of the information. You haven't gotten all of the facts. And he said, it's a folly and a shame because the truth will come out. The truth will always be known. So we have to get the facts. Proverbs chapter 18. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 17 actually deals with what is being stated here. What was stated in the article. Proverbs 18 and verse 17, it says, "The first one to plead his cause seems right." Somebody comes to you and they tell you something and, well, that seems right. "Until his neighbor comes and examines him." You add in a second perspective and the story usually changes. You know, they say if you want to get the truth on a story, you ask several people. Because as it comes in, it starts everybody's perspective, everybody's recollection, everybody's record of what took place, their witness of what took place may be different. So he says, we add in. So the first one to plead his cause seems right, but we can't base things on the mouth of one witness. Clark commentary says, "He that is first in his own cause," meaning any man may, in the first instance, make out a fair tale because he has the choice of circumstances and arguments. He's the first one. He can build it up however he desires. "But when the neighbor comes and searches him, he examines all, dissects all, swears and cross-questions every witness, and then brings out the truth and the facts." Makes a difference when you start beginning getting truth and facts, or you start putting things together and you go, well, based on what they told me and what they told me, now I can kind of get a better picture of what took place. There's more than one story. So it takes more than one that seems right. So first, we have to evaluate different sources. Not getting everything from one place, not getting all of our information or news from one source, not getting all of our story and something that has taken place from one individual. Now, individuals might say, well, why do we have to hear the other side? I told you the truth. You've already talked to me and I told you how it happened. Well, that's good. I just want to talk to the other person and see what they say. And it's interesting sometimes in cases like that, you'll get two different stories and you're going, somewhere in here, we're going to find the truth. Get your information from different sources. Number two, he says, identify conflicts of interest. He said, liberal sources usually have vested interest in spinning stories to the left. Conservative sources usually have a vested interest in spinning stories to the right. Employers usually have some vested interest in making their company look good. Well, it happened this way because our company doesn't allow these things to take place. People who gossip usually have a vested interest in making someone look bad. It is done out of deceit. It's done out of when we talk about having love towards God and love towards our neighbor, not bearing false witness is about showing respect and love towards your neighbor. And if you're trying to make someone look bad, that is a lie, or it is a deceptive way of bearing a false witness against someone. We can ask ourselves this question, did I tell the whole truth, or did I only tell parts of the truth? Or did I only tell parts that would make me look good? You know, I won't tell a lie, but I'm only going to tell the parts that make me sound like I'm telling the truth. Did I use the truth in a deceitful way? You can say, well, everything I said was truth, so I don't have anything to worry about. Did you use truth in a deceitful way? Or did I make sure that the words had no hidden agendas and no ulterior motives? We speak with a hidden agenda. That will be made known. That is something that is spoken, whether it be in darkness or whether it be openly. It is something that will be made known. If you have a hidden agenda, you have an ulterior motive, if you're doing something deceitfully to lead someone in a direction. And again, we need to honestly examine the whys and the hows of what we say. These are things that come from our mouth. Where does being a false witness come from? And why would a person even dare to do that? And we think, well, you know, people lie all the time, usually to protect themselves or usually to make you think something of someone else. Matthew 15, verse 19 says, "For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, idolatries, fornications, thefts, false witness, and blasphemies." So where does it come from? Where does being a false witness come from? It comes from the heart. If you have no problems with being a false witness, this is something that God says, these are evil. These are things that come from the heart. It describes your character. It describes your integrity. And it is the opposite of the characteristics of integrity. So it comes from the heart. And Jeremiah 17:9 says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" It's that person's character. Verse 20 of Matthew says, "These are the things which defile a man." The things that come from the heart. And again, when we bear false witness in whatever way, whether it be from a lie to bearing false information or telling the truth deceitfully or causing someone to think something as in a spin, all of that is false witness. So why we would ask ourselves, well, why would anyone ever do that? It defiles us. And not only does God command us not to do this, he says this is a behavior that he hates. Do we hate false witness? If somebody's coming to you constantly with gossip and you're soaking it in or listening to it and you're saying, well, tell me everything you know, if it's gossip, if you know that it's gossip, then we are to avoid it. Do we hate false witness or do we hate those kind of things as God hates them? Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 16. Proverbs 6 and verse 16. He says, "These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies." Now you can say, well, that's the same as a lying tongue. Again, there's a difference between speaking a lie or a lying tongue and a false witness who speaks lies. One who sows discord among the brethren. It's different than a simple lie, and no lie is really simple. But it is also a lie that God hates, either one. And it's one that is done to hurt another. A false witness that speaks lies is speaking something to the harm of another individual. It goes to the heart of love for God and love for neighbor. Let's look at the results of a false witness. What happens? Proverbs 25:18 says, "A man that bears false witness against his neighbor is a maul, a sword, and a sharp arrow." Gives three tools or instruments that are used. A maul, if you've ever used a maul, is a big, heavy, like a hammer. A sword and a sharp arrow. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says, "A false witness is as destructive to the reputation as such weapons are to the body." If you were used a maul against someone or a sword against someone or a sharp arrow, it said a false witness is just as destructive to the reputation of an individual. Henry commentary says, "That which is here condemned is mischievousness. And he said, "It is the power to ruin not only a man's reputation, but their lives, their estates, and their families, and all that's dear to them." He said, you can take a person completely down by bearing false witness against them. Of course, if you condemn them for doing something, or if they are condemned because of a witness that you've given, if it is a false witness, he said here, that you're ruining not only their reputation, but their lives, their estates, and their families. False witness also has to do with many that are called in today's society to a particular event. If you're called to do jury duty, and again, we know that sometimes you could be put in a position of opposition to the truth. if you are on jury duty. On jury duty, and many say, well, I have no problem being on jury duty because I'm going to judge. We're told to judge matters, and I can learn from this. But it could put you in an odd position because at certain times on jury duty, they say, well, you're only to judge what we tell you. And somebody will make a statement, and they say that, well, that may be truthful, but scratch that. Jurors, you didn't hear that. You're to remove that from your notes. Now, it may be truth. And you go, well, how do I remove truth? I just heard it, and it was something that was truth. It was backed up. Oh, but the information wasn't acquired properly, or we can't use that. So you can't use that truth in your judgment. Again, it changes the way we look at things. Leviticus chapter 5 and verse 1. Leviticus chapter 5 and in verse 1. If a person sins in hearing the utterance of an oath and is a witness, whether he is seen or known of the matter. So here you got somebody swearing under oath as a witness, says whether he's seen it or whether he hasn't, if he does not tell it, he bears guilt. You're given information and you have information that is pertinent to what is taking place and you don't provide it, then you are guilty. So Clark commentary says, it is generally supposed that the care referred to here is that of a person who being demanded by civil magistration to answer upon oath, he refuses to tell what he knows concerning a subject. They say, I want you to tell the truth. And if he refuses to say things that he knows about it, then it says, such one shall bear his iniquity and shall be considered as guilty in the sight of God of the transgression which he has endeavored to conceal. He must expect to be punished, for by him hiding the iniquity which he was privy, or suppressing the truth that is now being discovered, it would have led to the expulsion of the innocent and the punishment of the guilty. So he says, if you know something, you have information on something, and it would have protected someone, and you don't use it, he said, you are guilty, and you should expect to be punished. So if we know something, and we don't bring it forward, you know, it's not lying and giving false witness. It's not just verbally saying something. It could be not saying something when you should have, not bringing it forward. He said, if you know something or conceal it as your judgment, or in your judgment, it is a sin. So we're told you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. But it goes much deeper than simply telling a lie. It deals with lying. It deals with partial lies or partial truth. It deals with misrepresentation, misrepresenting the truth. It deals with the intent. What is the heart? And why is it being done? It deals with maliciousness and not only telling a lie, but doing something that is the perversion of truth. Something that's going to cause pain or cause the reputation of another to be damaged or harmed. We have to be aware of what we say and what we repeat. We need to have the mind of being watchful for the truth. And it says if you are around individuals who continually portray false witness or continually gossip and lead an individual to believe certain things, we need to remove from that. But we need to be watchful for truth. We need to think in terms of what was written in Psalm 120 and verse 2. It says, deliver my soul, O Lord, asking God to help keep you away from these things. Deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips and from a deceitful tongue. These are descriptions of what bearing false witness is. And again, there's much more to it than what we've covered today. But bearing false witness, or as it has been simplified in the Ten Commandments, you shall not lie, goes deeper, and there is a spirit behind that law. And we need to be very careful how things are said, how things are perceived, and what the heart is behind it, and how even truth that is twisted can bear false witness.